Welcome to An Evening with Nirvana. It's a podcast where I'm talking to a series of guests from the Doom community, maybe some people outside of it too, about things like level design, map creation, other facets of game development. Today I'm talking to Tango, most well known for his popular weapon mod Supercharge and accompanying maps at Paradise. You may know him as a contributor to BTSX1 and 2 as well, Plutonia 2, or a number of other community projects over the years. He's also got a ton of single map sets, things like Twisted Dimension, Stone Turmoil, a lot of old goldies in there. We'll be talking about those. Welcome to the podcast, Tango. How are you doing?
I'm great, Nirvana. Thanks for having me. Those are some reaching far back on some of those, for sure.
Oh, we'll be talking about them, so be ready. the obvious question, how did you get into Doom?
Yeah. I was too young in the 90s to go out and buy the game myself, but I had family members that were older who played the game, so I was exposed to it. And then at some point in grade school, my uncle gave me a copy of the game with Chex Quest. So my parents were sort of strict on like what level of violence I was able to have in the video games I was playing, but Chex Quest was a way to sort of appease them because it was so, so fruity, I guess. Uh-huh. So I played through the game originally with Chex Quest. It's got like the version I had like 6 levels, I think, and then it just sort of continues on into the rest of Doom 1. So that was the way I experienced the game at first.
That's interesting. So you played through the first 6 levels of as Chex Quest, and then you just played regular Doom after that.
Yeah, and in fact, it was worse than regular Doom because the way that Chex Quest was set up, any monsters that weren't replaced for the first, like, the actual, like, 6 levels it contained, they just sort of zeroed out the sprites and, I think, like, replaced them with transparent graphics. I think similar for a lot of the textures, like, a lot of stuff just became gray walls, I think.
Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah, so I was playing in J-Doom at the time, too, which was, like, the early 2000s.
Wow.
Like, it was, like, the port with 3D models and dynamic lights and all that jazz. So I remember getting to the end of episode 2 and the cyber demon just didn't have a sprite. It was just like a tiny floating dynamic light that would shoot rockets out of his invisible crotch occasionally. So there was a lot of saves coming to be had. It was not the best way to experience the game in the first place, but
that's what I did. That's unbelievable. That's the greatest first Doom experience ever. Exactly as it intended, I think.
Yeah.
J Doom is maybe the worst port you could have experienced Doom in to begin with. I think.
Yeah,
that's a rough one.
yeah, could have been better.
Yeah. So, when did you sort of get your hands on like Doom 2 and the other Iwoods?
I think after a while, like I had the game. It's like I had Doom itself without Chex Quest for a while, but I knew my parents wouldn't be keen on me playing it, and then after a few years, I was like, I'm going to just try playing this without Chex Quest and see if anyone really cares.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. This was, again, like late grade school. I actually played through Doom 1 and Doom 2 for real with, you know, the way it intended.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, it was all pretty close together.
Yeah. And which of the Iwoods? I feel like I know the answer to this, but which of the Iwoods do you think was like sort of your favorite or the one that resonated with you the most, I guess?
Well, if I had to guess what you're guessing, mm-hmm. I would say Plutonia, but I actually, if that isn't the case, if what you're thinking, I didn't actually play Plutonia until I was, I don't know, a teenager or something, just because I only had Doom 1 and Doom 2. Those are the only Iwoods I had as a kid, so that was all I had for quite a while.
Well, yeah, I did think Plutonia, but I was just speaking generally. Do you think Plutonia is sort of the one that you enjoyed the most overall or not so much?
Yeah, after having played it, yes, absolutely. And like TNT, I've never played the whole way through still. And like, what's that map in TNT? Habitat, like map 21. Yeah. That I remember looking at that in the editor for the first time when I was like actually using Doom Builder, and I was like, this is a joke, right? This is garbage. I'm never playing TNT.
How dare you?
So.
Habitat, not a great map. TNT definitely has some redeeming qualities there. We're a We're a TNT apologist podcast.
Okay, well, I will slander TNT no more, but when I was younger, I was not about it.
I think if you ever get to a point like where you become more interested in like atmosphere and you know, things like that, over like combat design and like guiding the player and like the basic stuff, like once you become a bit more okay with like abstract weird shit in Doom, then you start to be like, yeah, TNT's got some interesting stuff in it, but it's not for everyone, that's for sure.
Yeah, totally. And I think for me, this was the case, at least when I was younger, it was a lot easier to be elitist about the game and designing levels. So it's easier to brush off TNT and other things that had similar redeeming qualities that maybe weren't as obvious on the surface.
Yeah. It's become cool to hate TNT for sure. So you gotta get past it. And then we get into the reverse where everyone loves TNT and then you have to be the hipster again and then you hate TNT. It's the cycle.
It is.
So speaking of your early Doom career, Redemption.wood. It's I think the earliest work listed on the Doom Wiki, at least. Had some pretty strong opinions about it in the id Games reviews. Can you talk a bit about that one and why that might be?
I'm so glad you mentioned the reviews. So like when I was younger, Doom Connector was a thing. Were you around when Doom Connector was a thing, Nirvana?
Is this like for getting online and playing with other people? Is that?
Yeah, it was like an integrated chat and launcher client that supported a bunch of ports, and it was like for a young, dumb, not super tech savvy kid, it was a great way to be able to just like load up a deathmatch or co-op session with friends that you met online. It's like, this is where I met Doom Kid, for example, who's been around for fucking ever as well. And Imp Boy, who made some maps in Redemption. So this was just a map set that was like, you know, there were a few of us friends that became friends on Doom Connector, and we started making maps and sending them back and forth and playing them in co-op in Doom Legacy, of all things. Speaking of these reviews, I still don't know this person's if this person has like a true identity or, but at the time there was this guy named Big Ducks, who I didn't realize as a kid that was Big Dicks, but his name was Big Ducks. And he was just kind of a bully. I think he'd like talk shit to me on Doom Connector. And then, I mean, I don't have 100% proof it was him, but there is this one review on Redemption on id Games where he's just being a dick. And it's like, it's almost certainly got to be this guy.
Big Ducks.
Yeah. So,
is this a call out to Big Ducks?
Yeah. It's a tough thing to deal with, I think, as I was like 13 maybe when I made Redemption. And in his review, in the last map of the WOD, you get to this room where it prints on the screen, like, you know, welcome to your death, mortal, choose your fate. And you can take one of three teleporters to different rooms with different monster configurations. And so in his review on id Games, he just like misrepresents the text. He says, welcome to Room of Die, choose your die, in all caps with ones at the end. And all, like, as a kid, it's like, now I know it, this is obviously false, but as a kid when you're 13 and someone's misrepresenting your work like that, it feels really bad.
It's true.
So that was a rough one for sure.
Yeah, so if you're out there, Big Ducks, we've had it with your shit, basically.
I would love to discover that Big Ducks is actually someone else who's like actually been in the community Ribix this whole time and is reformed. Yeah, it's Ribix is reformed.
I don't want to call him out or anything, but he did tell me one time that he is in fact Big Ducks. It's awkward, but I will say, as much as clearly I don't like the aspect of id Games reviews where they would bully 13-year-olds. I do kind of miss the anonymous id Games reviews because they were just so awful. Like, just such... usually a very useless place to get feedback, but so bad that they were funny, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah, totally. You get a lot of gems that, as long as you can not get your feelings hurt by it, people say some wild shit, man.
It's true, yeah. But moving on from Redemption, to what is maybe the beginning of your redemption arc in Big Duck's eyes. Twisted Dimension, fairly like heavily scripted encounters and stuff. Was this when you like moved into your like very Z Doomy period? Was that the port you were just the most interested in at the time?
I think so. At the time that I made that, I was really inspired by the work of Agent Spork, who made a similar, very uncannily similar map called something Chaos. I don't remember what it was, but it was like the same premise. You like very linear, pretty flat design, but nicely detailed. You go from room to room and you get locked in and you have an arena encounter. So I was really inspired by work like that. And I think it was just that Z-Doom allowed me to make that kind of like to lock you in and like enforce things in this way. You know, you could check to see if all the monsters are dead in the room before opening the bars. That was like such a novel thing for me at the time. So that's what drew me to that.
Yeah. And what was your experience like learning Z-Doom and like features like ACS and stuff?
ACS always felt like it was beyond my reach because it just seemed like witchcraft to use, and anything programming related seemed, I just felt, was too far beyond my capabilities. But if it was basic stuff, I could do that, you know, floor lower, delay 35, ceiling raise, whatever. That stuff was easy enough. I'd spent a sufficient amount of time, at least, mapping with non-Z-Doom before that, that moving to Z-Doom was fine. And, you know, today, the gap between classic Doom format and UDMF is a larger gap than it was at the time between Doom format and what was advanced at the time, which was Hexen format. They're not that different.
I definitely, as someone with a non-programming background, I definitely also, I think I was maybe a couple of years older than you might have been at the time, but I remember trying to learn ACS and also being like, how the hell do you do any of that?
Yeah, when you encountered someone that knew how to do it well, it just, they were gods in my eyes.
Yeah, I'm sure you can still go to, I think you can probably still go to the Z-Doom forums and see my old posts where I'm asking people how the hell to do ACS stuff, because I was like a Z-Doom mapper originally, yeah.
Him. Yeah, I have no doubt that I have the same things out there on the forums.
Yeah. Where the hell is Big Ducks? That's probably what you were asking. Tell me to face me.
Where is Big Ducks and how do I ACS? Those are the two big questions in 13-year-old Tango's mind.
So Stone Turmoil was the next one I had on the list, and it's a bit more traditional. It's like a bit less focused on like gimmicks and more on like combat set pieces and stuff. Do you remember your thoughts regarding like the combat design for that one at all?
I feel like it wasn't until I played Sunlust in 2016 or 2017 that I really have it. That was when I had a sort of revelation about gameplay in Doom and how to make interesting combat setups. So like, honestly, anything before that was just sort of, it's not fair to say there was no thought put into it, but I kind of just didn't really know what I was doing. I still feel like that oftentimes today too, but that's a long-winded way of saying that I can't remember any particular thoughts going into the combat design there. I think it was, you know, speed mapping was a big thing for me at the time. I discovered that as sort of the most effective means to get output out of myself. So I'd speed map some stuff. I'd just throw things down in the editor. I'd send it to the close friends that were good at the game, or actually good at the game and could test things. And then I'd just make tweaks from there. So any good gameplay wise that came out of what I did at that time was certainly in thanks almost entirely to the people I had around me that were testing.
Well, I did want to talk about 32 and 24. Because and you were talking about speed mapping and stuff, which I would imagine you did a bit for this community project. I was wondering why you particularly enjoyed 32 and 24, because it seems to be the main community project that you take part in, from what I've seen on the wiki.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, I mean, yeah, that's entirely true, and seems sort of weird because most 32 and 24 projects are multiplayer oriented, and I've never played that much multiplayer. In fact, I'm sure you could say the same for 99% of the people that contributed to those projects.
Right.
But for me, they were so attractive because, I mean, again, like I said, speed mapping was a way for me to get output. Like, I knew I could do that. So it was good in that it gave me a platform to do that. And secondly, it was just really great practice for visual design for me, especially the later 32 and 24 series, where it was split up into two phases where you do a layout and then we'd test it and then you do the detail and you had a little bit more time for that. All that stuff was so enjoyable because I felt like I could learn how to make my maps look nicer, and then I could start to flex that muscle. And, you know, deathmatch maps are so small compared to what you can do in single player generally that it's easier to spend time combing over the fine details, which all that experience, I think, gave me a lot of growth in terms of visual design.
And is it a lot of the same people taking part in 32 and 24 each time, do you find?
Yeah, totally. I'm sure if you looked at the list of credits, there are a good handful of people that were mainstays. There's like, I partook in almost all of them. Essel was, you know, a constant factor in all of them. And in some cases, she organized and compiled them. Mechadon was a pretty frequent contributor. I can't think of any of those off the top of my head necessarily. But yeah, there was a lot of people that worked on a good number of those.
And do you think, like, part of joining community projects is sort of, like, returning and working with the same people? Do you think that's, like, as important as the mapping aspect for you?
That's interesting. I think I would maybe think not. Not in the case of 32 and 24, at least. Well, maybe it is. There is something fun about putting together a crew of people, having, like, knowing that in this 24-hour span, everyone's working on their shit. We're doing it separately, but we'll all convene at the end. And that's sort of a, I guess there is sort of a, like, camaraderie that you get in doing that. So even if you're not directly working with a lot of other folks on the project, there is a shared experience that way that I guess is ends up being an important piece of the puzzle, maybe.
Yeah. And do you think, you said that, like, speed mapping was something you knew you could get output from. Do you think those early 32 and 24s you joined had a big impact on your mapping then?
I think, yeah, but not necessarily because there was anything that special about 32 and 24. It was more that it was a means for me to actually make shit. That was the important piece for me. I think Mechadon at some point said that the match maps, which includes 32 and 24 and a bunch of other projects that he's done over the years, he's done so much work on deathmatch and other multiplayer maps that he credited, I believe, that to his ability to make interconnected layouts to that. And I don't have nearly the same, like, level of, I don't have the same ability to do things in the way that he does, but I think you could say, I could say the same for myself, that there are some aspects of making deathmatch maps that will inevitably bleed into non-deathmatch maps. So it was useful in that way, I'm sure. But the main thing was just getting me to make stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, with Gyrotechnics, which is another sort of small word that you put together, I think you start to see the difficulty and stuff ramp up a little bit. Do you remember, like, what kind of difficulty you were sort of aiming for around that time? Like, what stuff you were playing that might have influenced you in difficulty and stuff?
Yeah, for sure. So Scythe 2 came out in 2005 or 2006, and that sort of became my, that was like the holy grail of the game for me. It had, Scythe 2 had everything that I wanted out of Doom. It had great music choices of, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, a Mega Man and Final Fantasy tracks in there that I really, really liked. And it had distinct visual themes that made the levels feel distinct from one another. And I just thought it was fun to play. And I, if you asked me at the time, I couldn't have told you why exactly, because again, my understanding of the game wasn't that deep, but I knew it was fun. So if anything, that is probably like what my target was when I was making single player work around that time, would have been Scythe 2. Like if I could make anything close to that, I'd have felt like I did my job right, you know?
Mm-hmm. But you were still mostly just sort of making gameplay that, that felt fun to you, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think I had a very much of a method to doing things, but I just throw some stuff in the editor and try and feel it out and see what worked.
Mm-hmm. And then Systematic Corruption, it's like a bit more non-linear, which is interesting because you were talking about sort of the deathmatch designing and stuff. I wonder if that deathmatch influence started to seep in around this time, because it definitely has like more of a non-linear like looping structure with lots of different routes you can go down and stuff, it felt like.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a fair thing to say. And I'm sure there are aspects of making deathmatch maps that formed my style and my tendencies in ways that I'm still not really conscious of. So yeah, I think that's a fair thing to say, that it probably did bleed over in that way.
Yeah, because it's definitely something I noticed in isolation, just playing through it, that it seemed like you'd grown a little bit in terms of like what you wanted out of layout design and stuff at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, although I think I will say that a lot of mapping for me has felt like I do, you know, I try five things and I'm not feeling it. So, I start a map, I don't get very far because I don't like it, and then I try it again. And then the same thing happens. I do that a few more times. And then on like number five, I feel like I've struck gold. I've gotten lucky. I love this thing I'm doing, and I do that thing and it works out. Mm-hmm. So because that's sort of been my experience throughout so many of the maps that I've made, I think in some ways, like these positive aspects you're talking about are sort of just luck, you know. You do it enough times and then you're bound to get some good result at some point.
But Are you someone then who like you'll make a layout and then completely delete it and then start again, or do you ever try to like tweak an area until it's like up to your standard kind of thing?
I've done both, certainly. I try these days to not delete anything. I like to archive everything that I do, because you never know when something you did in the past is going to be perhaps useful to something you're doing in the future, or you know, in 20 years you're just going to want to look back on whatever you've done. I've done both. Sometimes you tweak infinitely, and sometimes you feel it's total garbage and like scrapping it is the only option. But yeah, the thing about scrapping what you're doing is that it's easy to do that when it's your own work, I think. But, you know, anytime you hear about one of your favorite mappers having a map that they just completely threw in the garbage, you're like, no, like, I've been waiting for you to release something. Please take it out of the garbage. Give it to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's hard to have that perspective about your own stuff, of course. But for that reason, I try to throw less things away completely now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these days if I delete a section, I'll make it into a prefab instead, and then I'll just keep it somewhere, just in case.
That's an interesting strategy. Does a prefab end up just in a WAD file, or is it saved as some particular Doom Builder specific file?
Doom Builder has I think it has a folder for them automatically, and then you can just, like, if you go to the prefab menu, you can just do like load prefab or whatever, and it'll just come in as if you're copy and pasting something.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's a cool idea. So long as you're backing up your prefab folder.
Never.
Okay. Yeah, leave it up to fate.
It's usually just bits and pieces, so it's not too bad. I think there's some like Fracture Worlds junk that I deleted somewhere around.
Yeah. Yeah, it's inevitable that you gather that stuff throughout the course of a project. And I think it is ultimately a good thing to recognize when to let something go.
Definitely, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a chunk in... It was, like, right in the dead center of the map. And I built it relatively early on for map 6 of Fractured Worlds, and I hated it for the entire time that that I was making the map. And I couldn't get the texture themes to, like, because it needed to tie the entire map together, really. I could not get the texture themes to blend properly because there are quite a few different ones in that map. And it just didn't work. So I just ended up, right, like, I had finished the map. I was like, okay, I'm done. And then I was like, fuck it. I'm deleting that whole section. I just deleted the entire center of the map and I rebuilt it in like 4 hours or something. And it was like exactly what it needed. So
yeah. Yeah. That's funny because that is often how it goes, is that you spend so much time mulling it over and thinking about if you should or shouldn't. And then once you finally pull the trigger, you make something better in a fraction of the time and wonder why you waited so long to give it a second stab.
Yeah, I think maybe sometimes you need time with the rest of the layout to know what's missing from it almost. So then you can come back and you kind of know exactly what you need to make, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it does. I think just like fresher eyes in general help, right? Give yourself a little bit more distance from everything, and then you can come back to it with a slightly different perspective, and maybe it's easier to identify what's working or what's not.
Mm-hmm. So Toxic Cove, another small map, but I think it, to me, it like showed evolution again in terms of the combat. Like there's more set PC kind of stuff. I was wondering if, like, at this point you were angling for more lock-in style combat, because there are a couple of, like, little lock-ins, and the way the player's pushed around feels like maybe you've been playing some different stuff at that point.
Hmm. I think lock-ins were sort of what I viewed as, like, the only solution to control combat situations in a fine way. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to realize that there are other methods for doing that. Like maybe you don't have to put bars up behind the player at every single fight. You can have them drop down on lower ground so they can't retreat. Or maybe it's okay to let them, you know, retreat sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, any presence of lock-ins in my earlier work is, I think, solely because that was the method I was familiar with to control situations and make them play out how I wanted them to. I can't say if I was playing anything in particular at the time that would have influenced my combat in a combat design in a different direction. I mean, Scythe 2 was just like such a huge inspiration for me for so long that that was like a wave that I rode for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, like, how do you build a layout for a map? Do you pre-plan? Do you do it untextured? Do you, you know, just build it as it goes? What's your usual method?
Yeah. I've spent so much time trying to figure out the answer to that question. And I think in doing so, I've realized that it's okay to not have one consistent answer for that question, which is to say that I've had success using, you know, every method under the sun. Sometimes I'll build a block out layout with no gameplay, and that turns into something I'm really happy with. Sometimes I will start with one fully detailed start room, and I'm able to complete it, no problem. You know, maybe you'll speed map something and you're doing everything sort of poorly, you know, gameplay and geometry design simultaneously, and then you can take that unpolished turd and refine it into something nice after you've had time to think about it a little bit more. So I've had success with sort of every method, and to this day sometimes I will try one, you know, if method A worked for me last week and I knocked out a map real fast, maybe I'll try it again this week and it goes so terribly. But that doesn't mean it's never going to work again. It just means for whatever reason right now that's not the right way for me to do what I'm trying to do. So yeah, I've succeeded and failed with every method that you might want to try making maps with.
Mm-hmm. And so part of it is just like whatever you're feeling at the time is going to work the best for that particular word or map or whatever.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in your case, do you tend to stick to one method in particular?
I think my process is pretty much always the same, but it's usually like a bit of a mix. Like, I always have combat in the back of my mind. Like, I might have... Like, there are certain set pieces where I will have, like, a very strict idea. I'm definitely building this, and I know all the mechanics of the fight and how it's going to work, mm-hmm. and then I build the space around the mechanic. But there are times where I will just build shapes, and then I will try to integrate, like, you know, this shape looks like it could have a monster closet in it, so I'll put, like, space for monsters as I build, and then, you know. I guess the key is that I generally always try to have combat in the back of my mind, but I don't always build my layout in, like, the exact same way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's been a really important lesson for me, is that to get a good result, you don't have to do the same thing every time. Mm-hmm. There are times... Sometimes you build directly with combat in mind, and that's the only thing you focus on when you're, like, blocking out an area. And then the area turns out fantastic. But it's equally valid sometimes to not have any combat in mind at all. Just put some shit down, and then you'll often find that you can still make great combat situations from that, even if you didn't make any special considerations in the design of the room for some specific combat scenario. So that's been a really important lesson for me, is, like, sometimes you gotta sort of release your hand from the wheel, I guess. Maybe not the metaphor I want to use here, but
just crash just sort the car.
Yeah, just crash the car and see what happens. Sometimes you can just sort of, I don't know, let the flow take you, and maybe it'll end up in a good place, even if it's not where you thought you were going to be.
Mm-hmm. And what about combat? Does that sort of come naturally, or is that pretty much the same thing? Like, that is just whatever makes sense at the time. You tend to do the same thing with combat.
Combat has to be more deliberate for me. You know, at any given point, I'm pretty frequently referring to other releases, like other recent releases. So, you know, as I've been working on the maps that I'm working on right now, I'll play, for example, Fractured Worlds for a few maps, and I'll, like, take screenshots as I go along of what I think are really cool combat scenarios, or maybe some combat I'm experiencing reminds me of a related but different idea, and I want to try that. So I don't play a lot of other releases, just because I dedicate so little time to Doom in the first place that I want to spend as much energy as I can during that time actually making the stuff I want to make. But when I do play the game, I try and take, like, notes, screenshots, whatever, as much as possible when I'm playing things, because that's the primary way that I get combat inspiration. Because it doesn't come to me as easily as other aspects of mapping might, but, you know, maybe this is the same for all aspects of my mapping, actually. Hmm. So, yeah, I'm very influenced by the things that people are making or have made at all times.
That's cool that you actually take notes and keep track of this stuff. I'm sure people would be interested in your thoughts if you wanted to, like, compile them into something, or, you know, put a thread up on Doomworld or something about your thoughts.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff is really scatterbrained. Like, if you look at my, you know, I have, like, a Facebook Messenger conversation with myself, and I'm sure if you just scrolled up through that conversation, it'd be just random shit like two-prong arch file left side demon horde room or something like that. Just, like, infinitely that sort of thing, because that's how scattered loose my thoughts tend to be when I'm doing this thing. I'll just, like, pause the game, write a quick note, take a quick screenshot or whatever, and then hope that one day I'll come back to this giant dump of scatterbrain notes that I have and make something out of it.
Yeah, I also, on my phone, I tend to take a lot of notes like that too. And sometimes I'll look at it and I'll be like, I don't even know what that means. Like, I look at it, like, a week later, and, like, I had, like, some ideas for what I wanted to work on, and I wrote down, like, a bunch of one-sentence, like, notes, and I think I could decipher maybe, like, I don't know, 5 out of 10.
Yes, that's super relatable. It's, for me, in those moments when I'm writing it down in the first place, I'll, like, have this moment of pause where I'm like, do I need to go into more detail about this, or am I just going to remember when I look at this later? Nah, I think I'll be fine. And then, yeah, the next morning you look at it and you're like, what the fuck was I talking about?
Yeah. Sometimes it's legit like 3 a.m. and I'll have to write it down so I don't forget it. I don't know if you've ever watched Seinfeld, but there's an episode where he like wakes up in the middle of the night and he thinks he's come up with this fantastic joke and he writes it down on a piece of paper, and then the next morning he can't figure out what he wrote down. And then when he finally figures out what the joke is, he's like, "That's terrible." Which is kind of how it goes, I feel like, sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. It's like the closer you are to sleep, the less likely you're going to be able to decipher it, and the more questionable the quality of whatever it is you wrote down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we are basically just stupid people when we dream. I think I read somewhere like you're using like a very small amount of your brain, which is why your dreams just make no sense. But Plutonia 2, jumping ahead a little bit here, but how did you get involved with that? And like, what was the experience like making a map for Plutonia 2?
So Plutonia 2 was mostly complete, I think, at some point in its lifespan in like the mid 2000s maybe, and then the project just died. I couldn't tell you why exactly, but it was pretty close to being done. But so it died, and the existing files from the project were hosted on some subsite within Doomworld, I think. And the like directory was actually publicly accessible. It was just you sort of had to, I think you had to like guess the file path or something maybe. So somehow I or someone else in the IRC chats that I was hanging out in discovered this public directory of mostly complete Plutonia 2 and started playing through it. And I can't tell you the details exactly, but somehow that sparked a revival of the project, which included throwing out a lot of existing work, making new stuff to replace it. And I had a speed map. I had like a, I tried to make a Plutonia-esque speed map, and then I think I pitched it in the revival thread, and someone said that, yeah, hey, this looks cool enough, so let's include it. So that was for me a really cool thing to be involved in. I don't think the map is particularly great. I think, in fact, in hindsight, it's probably perhaps the worst map in Plutonia 2. It's just,
Whoa.
I think it's just really uninteresting, and I don't think it necessarily accurately captures the spirit of Plutonia or meshes well with everything else in the set. But when I was, I don't know, 15 or 16 at the time, and I could say to my friends that I had a map in the sequel to an official expansion of Doom, which is like, it's like that's stretched in the truth. I think,
Maybe a
I mean, I
little bit,
guess,
but
yeah, but I still thought like technically I could say that, and that was a really cool feeling, even if the work wasn't didn't have that many merits of its own, of my level specifically.
Do you
But it
remember
was a
if,
cool thing.
yeah, do you remember if you actually made attempts to sort of like emulate the Casalis and stuff? Like, did you look at Plutonia maps, for your map, or was it mostly like getting a vague feeling of Plutonia and making it like something of your own?
I think my understanding of the game was still so, I guess just shallow that I don't think I tried that hard to emulate the work of the original. To me, Plutonia was the theme and the texture palette, and I just wanted to make something that looked like Plutonia, even if I didn't know how to make it play like Plutonia. Which I think is, for that reason, that's probably why my map is one of the weaker ones, is that I didn't really know what I was trying to emulate, or I wasn't trying to emulate anything at all. I just wanted to use the pretty brick textures.
Well, I don't think you're super alone in that in terms of Plutonia 2. I've always felt like Plutonia 2 was much more. It always felt less like there was a lot of strong attempts at emulation in that one than, say, like if you play Cydonia, I feel like that is very, very close to Plutonia in terms of like the gameplay and stuff. It's obviously like a little ramped up and there's like some more modern combat elements in it, but that's very close, I think. And then Plutonia 2 felt like, like you said, it's more about the feel of Plutonia, and then, people just trying to make fun maps.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like it wasn't really until the mid 2010s maybe that we started having folks on Doomworld and probably elsewhere in the community, that would write more publicly in an analytical way about the game. So like if you go back and look at the threads for Doom the way it did, there was the discussion there was a level of analysis of the game and level design that was just far beyond anything I had ever encountered in the world of Doom. So like anything before that, I think there was just so little, analysis like that that was posted publicly, that if you were like me and you were happy swimming in your lane with blinders on and not thinking that deeply or critically about what you were doing, it was easy to completely miss huge aspects of the game that made it what it was. It was easy to miss what made Plutonia Plutonia, or what made the original IWOD levels feel and play the way they did.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I do remember, yeah, reading a lot of threads about Doom the way you did, and I think there was a Plutonia-based project that maybe some of the TNT ones do, where people would get into like the really like nitty-gritty of the height variations used commonly and like, you know, stuff like that. People get analytical.
They do, and I think it's easy at first to see that as tedium, maybe, or like just kind of going too far, but that's just a knee-jerk reaction and not actually the reality. You know, if you, even outside of, you know, threads like that for big projects, if you look at the Doom World Megawad club play threads, mm-hmm. people like Demon of the Well that would consistently write these really beautifully written pieces on maps that broke down maps in a way that I just had never viewed the game. So I'm really thankful for people like that, that are willing to break the game down in that way and like communicate this for peons like myself that have trouble coming to those conclusions on my own.
I'm always happy with a Demon of the Well post, Kaka Awards or whatever it may be. Always one of the best.
Always top notch.
So this is a bit of an oddball one, but Seaside Hotel and Misty Island. It's a little invasion map that you put together. I was curious just about the process of creating an invasion map. Like, what are the major differences in terms of like layout design, things like that?
Yeah. Are you familiar with tracker module music, Nirvana?
I am, yep.
Okay. So tracker modules are something that I discovered when I was a kid, probably around the time I started making Doom maps, actually. And I'd always wanted, I had like so many tracker modules that I really wanted to use in a Doom map. And that was the catalyst for those two invasion maps specifically, is that I had these tracks that I thought were just fucking awesome and I wanted to hear them in a Doom map.
Mm-hmm.
And Invasion was attractive to me at the time. So for the uninitiated, Invasion is a Skull Tag or Zandronum specific game mode where you have generally a deathmatch-like map layout, and you have waves of enemies spawn in dedicated spawners, and then after certain waves, like barriers will open to reveal more of the map, maybe some power-ups will spawn, that sort of stuff. This is all standard stuff. Tons of games have done it, of course. But that structure was so attractive to me because it felt like I could get I could squeeze a lot of juice out of a little map. I didn't have to make a full single player experience necessarily, or a layout didn't have to be on that size. It could be deathmatch sized, and I was used to that level of interconnectivity given all the speed mapping for deathmatch stuff I'd done before, that it felt like it sort of felt like cheating. It was like I could make a single player experience with a deathmatch level amount of work. So that was what was attractive to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and I was sort of curious. Like, I suppose in the GZGM community and maybe like Xandra and stuff, Invasion is quite popular, but for some reason I always expected Invasion to like blow up with regards to Doom. Like, I always thought it would become this huge thing. What do you think? It's just that separation of like a lot of people are hooked into Boom specifically and things like that that makes Invasion maybe less appealing.
I think that's probably a big part of it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess are you saying that you'd think that Invasion would have a more broad casual appeal and it would be more popular as a result? Yeah. Yeah. I think that's pretty fair to say. And I would have expected the same. But a lot of multiplayer specific things like that, I think, are at this point confined to niche multiplayer communities, which is kind of a shame, but I guess Doom multiplayer is generally quite dead.
Yeah, I think the problem is probably that it's kind of still tied to Xandro, which is considered like a dead port because it's not being updated and stuff, I guess.
Right.
But even outside
of Xandro, I think there's... I mean, if you're going to play Doom multiplayer in 2023, it's either Xandro, Z-Daemon? And Odamex would be only candidates, really. And I haven't loaded up Doomseeker or anything in a while, but I'm sure if I did for any of those three ports, you're going to see a few active servers at most, like single digits, probably at any time of day, which is a shame. But I think that multiplayer itself in Doom is, for whatever reason, just not that popular.
I do think if GZ Doom had better integrated multiplayer, then you would see a massive uptick. Because there is actually, like, Doom has a pretty sizable population of players and people who are interested in the game. And GZ Doom is the go-to port because it kind of just does everything. So I think you would really see, like, a huge uptick in multiplayer service, probably.
Yeah, I would 100% believe that. If GZ Doom had some sort of, like, in-game server browser, maybe, that, and it, you know, it had client-server multiplayer code, I'm sure it would have a healthy population of players, at least.
You heard it here first, Graph. Get on it. It's easy to do, right? Very easy. Yeah. So, in the same token as Plutonia 2, you also worked on Back to Saturn X 1 and 2. These sort of big projects.
Yeah.
How did you end up making a map for BTS6?
Well, at the time of the project's inception, I was pretty good friends with Essel. There was this IRC channel many eons ago called DM Club, which you would think stood for Deathmatch Club, but it was Doom Multiplayer Club. We didn't play much Doom Multiplayer, but there was, I don't know, 7 or 8 of us or something like that who would just kind of shoot the shit and share maps amongst one another and talk about Doom. And Essel and I were both part of that IRC chat. So we became good friends after a while. And then at some point she had, I guess she started making the texture set and had been recruiting other mappers and asked if I wanted to participate. And I, of course, said, hell yeah. And I did. I was supposed to have a bigger footprint in the WOD than I ended up actually having. The original idea was, so I did one map in episode 1 and one map in episode 2.
Yeah.
I was also supposed to collaborate with Essel on map 1 of episode 1, which I was super stoked about, but I was a shithead and I took forever. I just took way too long. Like, we had deadlines and I failed every one of them. And I just handled the whole thing so poorly. So Tarnsman ended up stepping in and doing a much better job than I was ever capable of doing at the time. But outside of that mishap, it was a cool thing to work on. It was really cool to be involved on a project with so many other, like, mappers that I respected.
And so what was it like working with, like, vanilla limitations as somebody more used to sort of working in Z Doom and limit removing ports?
Yeah. Have you worked with vanilla before? I'm sure you've
known how much of a pain in the ass. When I was a kid, I did all my mapping in vanilla, so in Doom CAD. Okay. 95, baby.
Wow, you poor soul. I got to start with Doom Builder, so I didn't have to experience any of that.
Yeah,
vanilla limits are a pain in the ass. It wasn't too bad for me. I just had to make sure that I made my spaces sufficiently small in scopes so that I wouldn't have Vice Plane Overflows, things like that. So that aspect honestly wasn't too bad, and it's, but I have no desire to ever work in vanilla again.
Yep. Well, the map was named the 24th most memorable map in Doomworld's top 100. I was wondering, I guess, like, what you wanted to accomplish with that map design-wise, and, like, from a combat perspective, because I actually played through BTSX fairly recently, and I do remember that map as one of the ones that was, like, a bit more set PC.
Yeah, I remember watching you play it. I can't remember. You said something at some point that I was like, you talk shit about some small aspect of the map, and I was like, he doesn't know I'm in the chat.
You gotta tell me what it was. I can tell you with like almost 99% confidence that I was joking, because
yeah, I think you were. You seemed half joking at least. And it was something small. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what it was, but it gave me a chuckle. It was, do you remember, so the last fight in the map is you have this like some big symmetrical area where arch vials flood out, and there's a bunch of mancubi.
Oh my god.
You were like rocketing mancubi over and over and dying, and you were like, yeah, good fight or something along those lines.
I remember it well. The problem was I was trying to do this meme strat where I drop down and kill all the vials in one go. Like, I was trying, because there was one run where I got them to not teleport, and I could not get it to work again. So I just kept slamming my head into the wall. It was all on me, 100%.
Yeah, it's a painful thing to watch that sometimes when someone's playing your map, but I'm far enough removed from the creation of that map that it was just along for the ride like everyone else.
That was definitely my fault. But yeah, if you can remember sort of like what your thoughts were while building the map and stuff, design-wise, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. So I didn't build it to be the last, like the finale or anything like that. It just ended up shaking up that way once we had most of the maps completed and we tried to order things, I think. I say we. I take no credit for any of that administrative work of like ordering the maps. That was 100% due in Essel and other folks, I think. So I didn't intend for it to be the finale, which means it's sort of like, it's a little more bombastic in some ways. You know, you've got that big cave fight with the teleporting waves of monsters that I think is pretty, it's a little more theatrical, I guess, than some of the other fights in the set, but mm-hmm. that wasn't because I knew it was the final map or anything like that. I think I just wanted to make some cool shit, and I was really excited about the texture set that Essel had made. That I was just trying to, milk the textures essentially, and
yep.
and do what I could to make the most of them.
Yeah, I mean that texture set is incredible, really. As all of Essel's assets that she makes for the game,
absolutely. And if you can imagine, in 2010 or 2009 or whenever this project started, like, what were the other big texture sets at the time? There was like Gothic textures, there's a bunch of random stuff on Afterglow's Doomworld site, like Quake textures and Quake 2 textures, and
CC4 I guess would have been,
I think, I'm not even sure if CC4 text existed at that time. It might have been before that. But that is all to say that, you know, to go from what I had access to this monstrous library of beautiful new textures, like that was so exciting to be able to play with that before anyone else had access to it. So
yeah, it's a huge deal.
Yeah, totally.
And in BTSX 2, you have a much earlier map. You took like the map 2 slot. Was it a conscious decision on your part to make an earlier map in the set, or was it like BTSX 1 where you didn't actually know where it was going to end up?
Yeah, it was more of the latter. And in fact, that map in BTSX 2 was a repurposed map from what I intended to be a megawad of my own. I had like 3 maps made, and I intended to make it into a full megawad. What a fool I was. So I ended up realizing the megawad wasn't going to work out, or deciding it wasn't going to work out. And I did a huge overhaul to the map and retextured it with BTSX resources. And that's what became that second map, Underwater Explosions, in episode 2. And yeah, similarly, I don't think I did the gameplay with any particular slot in mind. It was just, like the map that I had that I repurposed, it already used barrels as its gimmick. It was just a nice coincidence that there was a Guided by Voices song titled with explosions in the title that we could use for the map.
Yeah.
It made it seem a little bit more like I made the map purposely for BTSX, but that was not the case.
Wow. These deep secrets out of the vault.
Yeah.
Okay, so probably the big one that people are waiting for, Paradise and Supercharge. Where did the idea for Paradise come from? Was Supercharge the main impetus for the set?
Yeah, it absolutely was. So I was really big into gameplay mods for a while. This was, I think, so much because I didn't understand the merits of Doom's combat potential on its own. I loved playing gameplay mods because it added flavor to something that otherwise got kind of stale for me.
Mm-hmm.
So Supercharge actually started out of, it was like sort of born out of a complex Doom modification that I was making, because I was really heavy into complex Doom at the time. And then I think I played Sunlust, and that was when I started to understand how you can make fun, intentional combat in the game.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, how can I meld that I've just learned with the fun of gameplay mods? So I just like took the modifications I was making to Complex Dune, ripped that out into its own separate mod, and then just started building from there and riffing on things. And that's how Supercharge came to be. It was a pretty like slow, gradual process.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think that if you look at the combat potential between Doom 1 and Doom 2, the additional monsters add so much depth to the combat, even if it's not fully realized in the base IWOD maps. There's so much more you can do with the monster roster in Doom 2. And I've always wanted to have a mod that felt that added to a degree that felt similar to that jump from Doom 1 to Doom 2. Like, okay, what if we have this great thing and we just add some more sprinkles on it? And like, can we add more monsters to make this deeper? So that was, I guess, like, that was what I had in the back of my mind when I was working on Supercharge. And so I had these ideas for new monsters, and then I wanted to make maps with that to explore, you know, how deep are these changes? Like, what do these actually add? What new fun scenarios can I create that otherwise aren't possible in vanilla? So that was what led me to do Supercharge and then build the maps out on top of it.
Yeah. And what about the aesthetics of Paradise? What made you want to make such like vibrant, bright maps? Do you feel like it's generally lacking in Doom mods? Was that kind of your thought process?
I don't know that I'd say it was the lack that compelled me most. It's just that if we go back to Scythe 2 again, you know that there's like the jungle episode. Jungle is a very loose term here, but it's the green vine covered episode with the viney temples and all that jazz. I loved that when I first played Scythe 2. And now I'm realizing the answer to your question is kind of yes. I realized that I felt that there were not enough maps that were using that sort of theme. So I've always wanted to do something lush and green and vine covered and explore that in the map set. So Paradise ended up being the point at which I guess I finally felt like I was capable of, or I was willing to tackle that dream that I had of using that theme. And of course, what I ended up with is not, it doesn't look like Scythe 2's episode. It's there's a lot of shared resources, but ends up being pretty different. But yeah, so I guess the answer is yes.
Well, there you go. These probing questions, huh?
It's funny, answers in my mind I didn't even know existed.
Yeah. So what were like some of the main challenges you experienced balancing Supercharge as a weapon set initially, and also like balancing Paradise around the weapons and monsters?
Honestly, I think everything that like balance of the working on the gameplay mod and making something with it in mind, I think it flowed pretty freely and smoothly. I don't feel like it was particularly challenging to like to make a set with the gameplay changes in mind. I think so, like Supercharge is really not that far away from Vanilla Doom. It's like it's vanilla with some sprinkles on top and some new monsters and new weapons, but it's not wildly different, right? And I think that aspect made it easier to make something like Paradise, because I could do sort of what I already knew, add a little bit of experimentation with the new stuff, and generally things worked out well. I thought I was able to do like new interesting things without too much struggle, I think, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And do you think that like that closeness to vanilla is why we're starting to see like other GZoom like UDMF mappers wanting to use Supercharge for their projects? Because it's not like other gameplay mods that are maybe so far away from Doom that it's like a completely different experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one reason for sure. But I think the other reason is just that someone had made a map set with the mod before. I think there for so long there was this image that, you know, the curmudgeons on Doomworld aren't interested in gameplay changes. But really the last few years of releases have shown us that people are okay with gameplay changes, but they are far less interested if there's no dedicated level experience to go along with it. So I think just like providing that first example and like setting the precedent probably makes it easier for others to, like, it gives people like a baseline, like, oh, okay, this is what it looks like if I make something with this mod. These are the tools that I have to work with. I've seen someone else use them, so maybe it's easier to build off of it for that reason. But certainly what you said, it being not that far removed from vanilla is probably a big reason.
Yeah, well, I will say, as somebody who doesn't use a lot of gameplay mods, I've used Complex and Project Brutality and stuff before, and I think one thing that I struggle with initially is like, what should I play this with that's going to be fun with this particular like set of weapons or whatever. So having a dedicated gameplay experience, like you said, with Paradise, it was like, oh, okay, well, this is fun because it's like built around it. So I can, like, you know, I get the full experience of the weapon set and the monster roster and stuff without it being, well, this monster probably shouldn't be in this space really, but it's been randomly put there. So now I have to deal with it, and it's kind of annoying, like, you know.
Yeah, totally. You will often end up in situations with randomized monster placement like that, if like some monster that just shoots fucking nukes at you and you're in a tiny box with it and there's nothing to do but save scum and corner camp.
Yeah.
So yeah, the guarantee you're not going to have that is helpful for sure.
Yeah, well, I think it also gives like your custom monsters, like, it shows the intentionality behind them a bit more. Like, when you were making the monster roster, were you looking for gaps in the like the regular Doom sandbox that you wanted to fill? Was that kind of your process?
Yeah, sort of. I think, though, maybe it's less explicitly that I was trying to identify gaps and more just that I was trying to identify new things that might be fun. You know, similar to what I said earlier about the jump between Doom 1 and Doom 2 monsters. There's a post on Doomworld by Linguica. I don't know if it's a hard C or not.
Linguica, yeah.
Linguica, okay. He made a post some years ago about He details why a lot of the Doom 2 roster additions are so important and emphasize different skills that weren't otherwise emphasized in the combat in the game in Doom 1. And so I remember seeing that and thinking, like, okay, this is a really helpful breakdown for me. Is there any way I can add to this and add monsters that have similar new, add to your mental stack in the game in different ways? So, yeah, less about the identifying the gaps and more just about trying to emulate that sort of newness and depth, I think.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a favorite monster from that that list that you've created?
In Supercharge?
In Supercharge, yeah.
Yeah, I think the Diabolist is probably my favorite. There are like a million ways you could do that sort of monster, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I've certainly seen people do similar things in the last few years. But I think that aspect of like area denial is just a really fun thing to me. It means that you got to watch your steps, because for anyone unfamiliar, the Diabolist, it's like the Archvile. When it sees you, it plants some essentially like fire mines at your feet. You wait 1, 2, 3, 4, and then after a second, they all detonate simultaneously. So you can't retrace your steps, otherwise you get blown up. I find that sort of like area denial fun. You got to pay attention to where you're going and where you've been. And I enjoy that aspect, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting idea. And I think when you've designed enough, I guess it comes into play in Slaughter a lot, where you realize that a lot of Doom combat is movement patterns. Like, can I circle strafe this? If I can't circle strafe this, can I U-strafe this? If I can't U-strafe it, can I do half a U-strafe and then open space up to U-strafe? You know, like,
yeah.
A lot of the stuff you're doing in your head while you're playing things is just trying to create enough space so that you can move, because, like, movement is your most powerful kind of tool, because Doom goes very quick. So, for like, sure. It's always interesting when people introduce, like, new ways to like, handle area denial and stuff. And I thought that Diabolist was definitely one of the more, like, dynamic enemies in the pack, for sure.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I think I'm really glad, and I feel very fortunate that Supercharge has gotten as much usage in other people's map sets as it has. And I hope that this is maybe some sort of catalyst for other gameplay mod developers to make their own map sets or find someone that's willing to. Because if you pop open the mod section on the ZDM forums, there's so many mods, so many that have been in development for so long and are so well put together and are like such great packages. But they're just waiting for people to really discover the depths of the mod, because no one's yet made a map set dedicated exclusively to that. So
it could be a good precedent for sure to maybe even just open it up to, like, hey, I made this gameplay mod and now I'm starting a community project around it, and you guys can build maps for it, like something like that might be a cool way to get started.
Absolutely. If someone wants to just, you know, I think people ought to just check out the mods and maybe, like, even making a one-off little speed map for an existing mod. Like, maybe that's all the jumpstart that some of these things need.
Yeah, that would be cool. New project for 2023. There we go. You also released Mini Charge, which is like a comp level 11 version of Supercharge. I was wondering if, with the advent of MBF 21, if you were thinking of, like, making an MBF 21 compat version as well to bulk it out a little bit more, perhaps.
Yeah, you're not the first to ask. I'd really love to have something like that. And in fact, there were some folks that were working on it themselves completely without my involvement. I'm not sure what the status of that is. It's been a
copyright infringement. That's the stuff.
Yeah. I issued a DMCA takedown immediately.
Yeah.
But for me, the projects I want to work on, I will, for the foreseeable future, probably keep using ZDoom and using Supercharge as a base. So while it would be awesome to have a more fleshed out MBF 21 compatible version of Supercharge, I know that I'm not going to be the target audience for that, and so I'm less inclined to spend the time making it. But if someone else wants to do it, that's fantastic. Like, of course, they have my blessing. Not that they need it, but I'd love to see that, but it's not in my plans, at least.
Okay, well, someone out there make it, but make it good.
Fingers crossed.
Or suffer Tango's wrath. Drought is an interesting project. What made you want to use Noise's D4V mod when you made maps for the project?
Yeah. This is pretty directly relevant to what we were just talking about, isn't it? I played D4V, and it's such a fantastic package. It's so well put together, and I felt like even within the confines of vanilla dehacked, the changes that the gameplay mod has are, you know, there's some things to explore there. I just wanted to make something with it, just so that it, because I felt it deserved some maps tailor-made for it. I don't know if there's been much activity of other folks doing the same with D4V specifically, but I hope someone does. It's such a great mod, and it deserves some love, absolutely.
And do you find that having made Paradise and working with Supercharge so much, do you find that you're generally more interested in like making maps for gameplay mods these days than sort of making stuff with Vanilla Doom in mind?
Yeah, but not necessarily in for the reasons you might expect, I guess. If playing the vanilla game, if gameplay mods were just not a possibility, I would still love playing Doom, because it's a fantastic game. And there's still so much depth to be explored in the vanilla game. But around the time that I was making Supercharge, before making Supercharge, I had not done a lot of Dooming in those years. And I had spent more time playing other games. I was playing modern games. I was playing like Overwatch and Fortnite and other, you know, first-person shooters.
Yeah.
Have you played Destiny 2?
I have not, but I know about it. I've seen a lot of it.
Okay. I'm not like recommending it or anything. I'm not in love with the core gameplay loop itself. But I played Destiny 2. I don't know, sometime after it came out on PC. And man, the gunplay in that game feels fantastic. Just like shooting all the guns, they just feel so good to use.
It's Bungie,
so playing
baby.
Other games, yeah, they know Halo, what the fuck guys. They're doing. Yeah. So once I sort of discovered what more modern games were doing with game feel, I just wanted to have that in Doom. Like, that's why a lot of what exists in Supercharge exists. With the weapons specifically, or even the monsters too, you know, the way monsters all have alternate deaths, and you're more likely to get this sort of bloody explosion mess of a death animation if you shotgun them from point blank rather than if you pistol snipe them from 200 meters. And you know, the screen shakes a little bit when you fire, and the shell ejects from the shotgun when you pump it, and all that sort of stuff. None of this is novel, even in Doom. None of this is my idea, but this is all to say that I really like those sprinkles on top of the game that just make it feel better for me to play.
And satisfaction, that, I think, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's the reason that I'm so inclined to use gameplay mods to build with them lately, is like I want those aspects in the game. And on top of that, I like the freedom to explore other things like new monsters and see what that might look like in the game.
Mm-hmm. And were you a fan of Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal?
I didn't play 2016. I played Eternal, though. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I had a good time with the game, for sure.
Did that influence how you feel about combat in Doom at all, do you think?
I actually don't really think so. I I mean, I need a little more. I need a little more time with Doom Eternal to have more confidence in my feelings about the game. But
right.
If anything, playing Doom Eternal, it was a fantastic experience. It made me appreciate the Doom we're playing even more, because there is so much versatility in Doom 2 that it's like you play something else and you're like, man, this is just, I just want to play Doom now, you know?
Yeah. There is something about, yeah, like the simplicity and the how solid each component of the game of Doom is. Like, mm-hmm. from sound design to the very simplistic monster AI that allows for, like, such giant amounts of monsters, and it really is like a perfect storm of game design, even like 30 yeah. years later or whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how much of a happy accident I think all these aspects of the game are. It's like, I can't believe that it worked out to be this perfect storm that it is.
Yeah. So, Knee Deep in Z-Doom came out not too long ago. Yeah. And I guess... Judy, your sort of friendship with Essel over the years is how you sort of became involved in the first place. I was curious, like, what kind of contributions you made to, I think it was map 15 of that WOD, and yeah, your sort of initial involvement in that, because it's a very old project, but recently revived.
Yeah, I honestly was actually surprised to see my name listed in the credits of it when it released.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've spoken to Essel a little bit over the past few years, but not as extensive as to be actually involved with the project recently. So, you know, it came out and I like saw myself in the credits and I was like, wait, did I, what? Like how, you know, did I actually do this? And yeah, for a time when the project was first started, I was involved and I was supposed to make Z1M3. And I remember doing a little bit of work on it. But, again, at the time I was slow and unreliable and the project itself just kind of faded into nothing for a good decade or so. I can barely remember what work I did for that map. And even when I was looking at it in the editor, I cracked it open a few weeks ago trying to find what I worked on. And I was like, okay, this room looks like maybe I think I remember doing this, but I couldn't tell you what exactly I did or didn't do.
That's fair. I mean, I think it is like an extremely old project, the original concept for it.
Yes, very. I think I was in like early high school or middle school or something when it first started. So that was eons ago.
I guess I was curious, were you thinking of like a follow-up to Paradise or a follow-up to Supercharge or, you know, another big Supercharge WOD? Is something in the works?
Yeah, I have been working on something with Supercharge over the last few years. It's comical, actually, how long this is taking. In 2020, I had a break from work. I had 2 weeks off. I decided I'd been wanting to do something that had a hub-based structure, so... I wanted to make something Castlevania inspired where you have a hub map and you go to different parts of the castle or whatever, and you can choose your own path and you end up in some finale, and it's, you know, that sounds like a fun structure. So in this 2 week break, I was going to make what was just like a rough proof of concept of this project structure.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the 2 weeks, I was like, okay, I'm not done. And I have some new ideas. So I'll take a little bit more time with the project, but I'll be done in 2 months. And then 2 months grew into 6 months, which has grown now into 2.5 years. And it's taken me all too long, but I'm working on something. It's pretty close to being done at this point. And it's not necessarily a direct Paradise follow-up, but it's using Supercharge and uses a lot of like Gothic resources and Castlevania music.
Exciting.
Yeah, so I'll be happy to have that out the door whenever that happens, hopefully soon. I would love to do a proper Paradise follow-up, you know, the the like ending map of Paradise teases that there may be more, which I would still really love to do. I just haven't put down anything in the editor that I'm super satisfied with, but someday, I hope. Beyond that, for Supercharge, I don't think I have any big plans. Rather, I would like to use some aspects of Supercharge as a base to build another gameplay mod. Have you ever played, are you familiar with Psychic, the mod that Zazer did some like 10 years ago?
I don't think so, actually. I'm not sure about that.
Okay. Well, it's really rad for anyone that likes gameplay mods. It is top notch and you should absolutely check it out. The premise of Psychic is that the player's arsenal is reduced to only 5 or 6 weapons, but you have a set of like 10 powers that it's like your secondary fire. So you know, there's like an ice power and a fire power and an earth power and a gravity power and a plasma power, all this stuff. So you shoot monsters and they drop experience, you know, globules, and you pick them up, and then there's like an in-game shop you always have access to either level up your powers or level up your weapons. And it's such a cool system. It's a ton of fun, but as with, you know, as we've been saying, it deserves its own map set. So I would love to do, I guess like an extension to Supercharge that has a similar system where you could, you know, acquire new powers, level up your weapons, all that sort of stuff, collect experience. I would love to do like what Supercharge or what Paradise is to Supercharge. I would like to do a map set to that kind of gameplay mod. So that's in the future. That's what I'd really love to do most next.
Mm, that sounds really cool. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I really do like this idea of getting people to make more maps for gameplay mods and stuff. I think they could really get them out there. I think we're revolutionizing Doom here. That's what we're doing.
Yes. Pioneers.
Definitely. To the final question, what is your favorite Doom monster and why?
I would have to say the Revenant, because I think the Revenant is a monster that is, where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. You know, each aspect of it is cool and interesting. It's got a homing rocket, but then not always. And it's got a melee attack, but you can bait it. And I don't know. It's like its health pool is 2 super shotgun blasts will always kill it. I think all those combine to make such a fantastic, versatile monster. It's deadly enough in small numbers, but you can use it in large groups just as well. I think it feels like a perfect storm, like a happy accident, in that I think so many of the knobs on the Revenant are tweaked in just the right position that if you go too far in either direction on some of these aspects, it could completely ruin the monster. You know, I think about like the Vor in Quake and the aggressiveness of its homing projectile. It makes it feel like, you know, it's a different monster, of course, but it feels like it's much narrower in usage and the like.
It's worse. Let's be honest.
Okay, thank you for being the one to say it first. It does just feel like an inferior version of the Revenant. It's just it doesn't do as many things and it doesn't do them as well. For that reason, like that makes me really appreciate how brilliant I think the Revenant is as a monster.
It is slightly hilarious to me that they looked at the numbers 10 to 80 and they thought that was fine though for the rocket.
Yes, well, I edited that shit out. Supercharge doesn't have none of that shit.
I think it's very funny though, personally. But people don't talk about the tens. That's the thing. It's always,
yeah.
Oh no, I got hit with an 80 damage rocket. This RNG is bullshit. But then they get hit with a soft, cushy 10. No comment. Doesn't even get mentioned on the stream, you know?
Yeah, the 10's got it rough for sure. No one gives a shit about them.
Exactly. Well, Revenant, good choice. You're in good company. I'm glad I didn't hear Archvile again, because everyone says Archvile, so, you know, at least slightly different.
Can't blame them.
I mean, yeah. It's the right answer, to be fair. Like, it's it's the most unique monster in the game, really. And I fully understand why it gets said so much, but, you know, I like it when I get a slightly different answer, too.
Well, you're welcome in that case.
But, yeah, thanks so much for coming on. It was really interesting. Good chat. Lots of things that, I don't know, that I do wish got talked about a bit more in the community in general that we discussed, like multiplayer and gameplay mods and things. They're all things that I think could use like a bit of a boost, and so, you know, hopefully
totally
that happens sooner rather than later.
Fingers crossed. Well, thanks for having me, man. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks a lot. And to everyone listening, thank you very much, and I will see you next time with another guest. So goodbye to Tango, goodbye to all of you. Peace out.